the Midnight Radio Network all across America, 800-288-9227. Welcome and good morning. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley. He is retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol. That means it's Ask the Law for Monday, November 7th, 2011. 800-288-9227. All the information and answers to questions are up to date. As of today, can change without notice, and any comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. So if you want to get in, 800-288-9227. You got a question on CSA. You got a question on something that happened to you recently. You wonder how it's going to affect you under CSA. You have a question on hours of service. All the regulatory items are on the table and here, absolutely free. We will answer your questions to the best of our ability. 800-288-9227. Let's talk EOBRs.
Okay.
All right. By the way, we want to thank Old Blue USA for making this show possible. AskTheLaw.org is their website. AskTheLaw.org. EOBRs. All right, here's what happened. The OOIDA, Owner-Operator Independent Driver Association, came out and they challenged the EOBR rule, saying that it was, you know, well, harassing.
Let's make sure that we explain which one of them they challenged.
Okay. There were two EOBR rules. The first one was basically that it was an EOBR rule that would apply to carriers who had a history of noncompliance in these reviews.
Correct.
Okay. And their compliance reviews. All right. So basically it was the older of the two.
Yes.
There's also legislative motion that required the FMCSA to come up with, to issue a rule that would make EOBRs mandatory for all commercial vehicles.
Yes.
So it's the older of the two. And thank you for bringing that up, because I sometimes fail to do that. I was going to get to that in a moment, but it's important to know that from the beginning here, that the older rule was challenged, and essentially the court came back and they found in favor of OOIDA. And so what now the FMCSA has come back and said, that's fine, we're not going to go in and appeal. They've said officially, we are not going to appeal.
Correct.
What we will do instead is move forward on another EOBR ruling, which we are led to believe that would be the second of the two EOBR rulings.
Correct.
That is still in place, and they have, FMCSA has so much time in order to, by law, to issue an NPRM on EOBRs. So we believe instead of the old rule where it applies to just those companies who have a history of noncompliance, because there was the judge found that, well, that's not right because it shouldn't apply to the drivers or even the drivers of those carriers who may have a history of noncompliance overall. There are plenty of drivers within that company that don't fit that mold.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're doing everything by the book, those drivers should not be required to have this EOBR. However, if you have a rule, which they will, that applies to all commercial motor vehicles,
yes,
then you have essentially across the board. There's nobody that can make the case that someone is being targeted or unfairly singled out.
Correct.
So now we believe that the FMCSA will come out as we predicted they would.
Yes.
With this new EOBR NPRM. So electronic onboard recorders will be out there in the future as a mandate for all commercial motor vehicles. We don't know when that will happen, but it could go a number of ways. We've heard by some that this could blend in. They could easily take advantage of this and say, if you've got an EOBR, the hours of service is really, a moot point because
yes.
You're going to have so many hours to operate and we don't want to see the truck rolling. I guess you would still have to have something that would say, the truck, has to shut down so many hours a day or whatever. But they could couple that with an hours of service rule. Anybody's guess is as good as anybody else's
yes.
right now.
Yes.
So there we are on EOBRs. It was the first EOBR rule had a deadline was to take effect in June of 2012.
Yes.
that deadline is scrapped. Everybody had kind of had etched in their mind that June 2012 date with EOBRs. That's gone. Now, they could come out with an EOBR ruling that still says that companies have, you know, until June 2012 to comply. We don't know. That would be, I think that would be pretty quick on a turnaround.
But. Oh, yeah. I don't know that they could get an NPRM out.
Because you have to have the
comment period.
The comment period, which has to be 60 days.
Right.
And then you have to send it to the OMB, which is up to 90 days.
Right.
So there's 5 months right off the books.
Right.
And then beyond that, there's even got to be a time between between when they announced that rule and when there is an actual NPRM. So
right.
You've got a few more weeks there.
Typically what happens is once FMCSA issues a final rule, they usually will give anywhere from 6 months to a year.
Right.
You know, before it becomes mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're still looking, you know, 2013, 2014.
Right, right.
Which I kind of suspected all along that 2014, you're going to see all commercial motor vehicles
right.
operating with EOBRs.
And even though it was an act of Congress in the second EOBR rule, even though it was an act of Congress that required the FMCSA to issue a ruling to require EOBRs for all commercial motor vehicles, it does not mean that it can't be challenged in court. It still will be a rule.
Yes.
And that new rule could easily be challenged in court,
sure.
And I suspect it would be by groups like OIDA and others.
Well, I think right now any FMCSA is probably in a situation that irregardless of what rules or NPRMs they
mm-hmm.
bring forward,
mm-hmm.
You're going to find somebody out there that is going to challenge them.
Right. And I think you'll probably have this with hours of service and with the OBRs for some time to come, because I don't know that even Congress would take up hours of service in any legislative item, because that would be the next question. On hours of service, imagine that it doesn't matter which way the White House goes with this. If the Office of Management and Budget of the White House decides to side with these six Republican members of Congress and say, okay, we're going to leave it alone, we're not going to change it, we're going to reject this NPRM by the FMCSA and not change the hours of service rule, or they come in and they accept it and they fast track it and it happens, there's going to be a court challenge there. So
well, there was a and I can't remember what the name of the legislator from either Vermont, somewhere up in the Northeast, was going to attach some legislation.
Yeah, in fact, that did fail, and I failed to mention that. And that was Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire.
Right.
She's part of the class of 2010. She was elected in November of 2010. Hard
right.
to believe that's over a year ago now when she was elected, and she started her term in January of this year. And it basically... it was an amendment to the Transportation Appropriations Bill that would have barred federal funds from being used to finalize, enforce, or implement the new rule. It never came up for a vote, so it was not part of this bill that was approved by the Senate in the Transportation Appropriations Bill last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So that is kind of sitting on the, you know, right now sitting on the sidelines. It doesn't mean that she can't reintroduce it at
Correct.
Some point.
Correct.
Because since there was no vote, we don't even know how that would go. We have no idea which way that would fall. I think there was some thought that bill or that part of the bill would not get enough push behind it. But now that Ms. Ayotte has a, you know, considerably more time to push for it, if she's planning on reintroducing this, she might be able to get some more support before, you know, whatever bill she's going to attach this to.
And that would give the Congress the authority to pass a law,
right,
and take it out of the realms of a rule,
right, and it would be a law.
It would be a law.
The problem with that is that then it becomes literally an act of Congress to change it.
Correct.
In other words, you couldn't, the ATA or OIDA or any of these groups, public citizen, Teamsters, could not just go to the courts to change it.
Correct.
They would have to then, they would have to go to Capitol Hill.
Right. And in that situation there, now that it becomes at the whim of a senator,
mm-hmm,
or a representative, and if they get elected and they want it changed, then all they have to do is introduce legislation to get it changed.
Right.
So it's one of those deals that, you know, you could be operating 1 year at this rule or at this law. Next year they want to change it and it's something different.
Right. And the question becomes then, do we want members of Congress getting their hands on an hours of service rule that
right,
had, most of them have very little, and I realize this is why you have lobbying groups that go to Capitol Hill to educate these lawmakers, to tell them why it would be good or bad, but it's not enough. I think if you have Ann Farrow, who had some, and the criticism is there too, and it's a valid criticism, even though she had considerable experience in the trucking industry, doesn't mean she's always going to make the right move or the move that everybody agrees with.
Correct.
So on either side, I guess you're going to have that problem. It doesn't matter who's in that position to make such rulings. It just becomes, I think, a little scarier when members of Congress, in my opinion, get hold of such items for an industry and then it becomes law.
Yes.
It has a little more of a weight in that fashion because, again, it's harder to challenge. All right, we're going to get you on board, 800-288-9227. Drivers, if you have a question about hours of service, a question about CSA, let us know any regulatory item. We would love to answer your questions toll-free and nationwide. Ask the Law continues right after this
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law, 800-288-9227. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
He is retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol, 800-288-9227. Ask the Law is a service of Old Blue USA. We want to thank them for sponsoring this event for many, many years now. And we want to let you know that all the information is up to date as of today, November 7, 2011, can change without notice. And any comments made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. 800-288-9227. We'll get to the phones.
Let's go to Keith in Dallas, Texas. Keith, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
My name's Keith. I was wondering, is it legal to have your license suspended on two separate occasions for the same citation?
Two separate occasions. If you...
I served 1 year suspension.
Okay.
I have a Class A CDL, and I guess they've done an audit or whatever they're trying to tell me. They've done an audit, state in Austin, capital, and they see where they didn't suspend my license once before, so they're going to suspend them again for a whole year.
What were your license suspended for?
A DUI. Guilty on my personal vehicle. No accident. First one ever.
Okay, here's chances are, Keith, here's what happens. Anytime a driver, and it doesn't make a difference if you are a commercial vehicle driver with the CDL or whether you have a passenger vehicle, several years ago Texas passed a law that required the driver to pay a surcharge. And depending upon what the violation was, there were points that were put on a individual's driver's license. And in other words, the state was using that to generate revenue. Rather than suspend your license, take your license away from you, you had to pay these surcharges. Once you got into that, whether it was a DWI or whether or not it was because you had too many points on the license, then you had to take and pay that surcharge every year. And if you paid the surcharge, or if you didn't pay the surcharge, then they would suspend your license, and the only way you could get the license back was to pay the surcharge. Well,
right.
When the next year comes up, if you don't pay the surcharge again, they come in and suspend your license again.
Right.
And so what happens is, on a DWI, there's a, you have to do it, I think, for 3 years. Every year you have to pay that surcharge, and if you don't get the surcharge down there by the time it's due, then they go in and will suspend your license. Now you have to pay a reinstatement fee along with the surcharge to get the license back.
We're up against a break here, so hopefully we'll be able to expand on this after the break. We do appreciate the call and the questions. By the way, drivers, you can get in right now at 800-288-9227. It's Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network. And Ask the Law, 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
He is retired senior trooper Monty Dial of the Texas Highway Patrol, and he is here to answer your questions. If you have any regulatory questions, 800-288-9227. Again, 800-288-9227. All the answers and questions are up to date as of today, Monday, November 7, 2011. Can change without notice. All the information and answers, statements or comments, rather, made by anyone other than Trooper Dial are considered to be opinions only. And if you go to the website, askthelaw.org, askthelaw.org, click on that big red button that says Email Ask the Law. You can submit your CMV questions anytime. Again, askthelaw.org. Okay, so this could be a very busy time. You know, what's interesting is I was talking with my friends from the ATA. This has been one of these wait-and-see years, but it seems like it's been busy because we've been dealing, I guess, with the anticipation of what might happen with EOBRs or hours of service. It's really been all about anticipation because nothing has happened, you know, as of yet.
Right. It was one of those that goes back to when Ms. Farrell announced the four listening sessions. Then they ended up including one up in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Then they ended up including a sixth one up in Mid-America.
Right, at Louisville.
At Louisville in March. And so ever since then, everybody's kind of been on pins and needles, waiting with bated breath to see what was going to come out of those meetings.
Yeah. And when I was talking with Barbara Windsor, she kind of said it, you know, she said, you know, actually nothing, not a lot has happened.
No.
I mean, CSA, we're all learning about that as it is kind of rolling out and has been for almost a year now. But really nothing is happening. It's the anticipation of what might happen.
Well, I think this is one time that FMCSA has been really tight-lipped.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't, you know, even on the law enforcement side, industry side, they're not saying anything.
Right. And that is unique. be interesting to see what happens out of all this. 800-288-9227. Let's get back to your calls.
Let's talk to Rick in Colorado. Rick, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
How you doing?
Very good.
Yeah, I was wondering on that. Instead of a 10-hour break, I've heard that you can do a 8-hour break twice a week if you need to, and I just wondered how that works.
What happens, Rick, is if you want to take the split sleeper berth, which means you have to have at least 8 consecutive hours in the sleeper berth.
Okay.
And I call that the long break.
That if it's 8 hours, it has to be in the sleeper berth,
right?
Not off duty.
Correct. Okay. It has to be sleeper berth only.
Okay.
Then you have a short break. The short break has to be at least 2 hours, and it can be off duty, sleeper berth, or a combination of the two. That is at least 2 hours. Now,
all right.
Here's what I found. Most of the drivers get confused about that.
Yeah, that is confusing.
What you have to do is the long break, the 8 consecutive hours in the sleeper berth, that will stop your 14-hour clock.
Okay.
All right? So, but it does not stop your driving. So what you have to do is you have to count the driving to the left of your starting point of the 8-hour break, and you have to count the driving to the right of that 8-hour sleeper berth. Those two driving periods cannot be more than 11 hours before you stop to take the second break.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Now, and then it goes on from there. Once you take that short break, now then you have to count the driving to the left of the short break. The driving to the right of the short break, it cannot be more than 11 hours.
Combined.
Plus, the short break, you have to count it in your 14-hour break.
Alrighty.
That short break, that 2-hour break, does not stop your 14-hour clock.
Correct. So, from the time you come out of the sleeper berth, after your long break, your first long break, your total duty time, that's line 1, line 2, line 3, and line 4, cannot be more than 14 hours before you either stop and take a second long break or you go off duty for a solid 10 hours.
Alrighty. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay. For,
you can go to 395-1G.
395-1G.
And that's where you'll find the explanation.
All right. 800-288-9227.
And let's talk to, we've got Dennis in Texas. Dennis, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. You're on Ask the Law. Welcome. Hi.
Hello. I was wondering, I recently received a inoperative tag light ticket and a logbook not current ticket. And I was, they said that was going to put points on my CFA score. How long are them points on my CFA score? How long will it take me to get my CFA score back down to zero?
Well, first off, Dennis, you as a driver, you do not have a CSA score. The motor carrier is the one that has a score. Now, what happens is the violations will show up on your history, but it will only be used when you seek employment with another motor carrier. What they're going to do is they're going to go in, have you sign a document, and they're going to run what's called a pre-screening employment data on you.
Right.
They will use that data to determine whether or not the motor carrier that you're looking at going to work wants to hire you or not. But as far as a score issued to the driver, FMCSA does not issue a score. FMCSA has no intentions of ever going in and disqualifying you based upon the information that is on your profile from roadside inspection.
In fact, those items would not even count against if you went to a new carrier tomorrow. They would not count against that new carrier's score, correct?
Correct.
So in that case, what they do when they go through that pre-screening hiring data, they look at that to see what, I guess, the history is, to see if that's something that's typical behavior, because they don't want that to continue under their authority and affect their CSA score. See, so, and it also could happen that your current company looks at that, and if they look and see a long history of this kind of behavior, they might reassess, you know, whether or not you're valuable to them now.
Right.
So
failure to keep logbook current will follow me for the rest of my career?
No. It only stays. What happens is they stay on your profile for 3 years. After 3 years, they drop off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, those items will drop off, and so it will not count against that carrier's scorecard after 3 years. But again, when they're looking for you for employment purposes, they're going to look at that, and we've been told by carriers they obviously look at that to see if there is a history. In other words, if they look and see that those are the only two items in the last 3 years,
right?
You know, then you have essentially. That's going to tell them that it is not typical behavior by you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, and it doesn't carry, if you go to another carrier tomorrow, those items don't go to that new carrier. They stay with the old carrier, and they fall off after 3 years. And they become, in fact, those points start to drop after the first year, correct?
Yes, yes, they do.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because my boss was trying to explain it to me.
Yeah.
You know, about... after a year, the points start coming down, and yeah. I was like, "What point?"
Yeah.
Well, what happens here, Dennis, is the motor carrier has a all of the data that is under CSA is broken down into seven categories. Each one of these seven categories, FMCSA issues a score to the motor carrier. FMCSA is looking for carriers that have a pattern of violations that are in the upper 90 percentile. Now, they rate carriers based upon the size of the carrier.
Right.
So, if you're employed with a motor carrier that is, say, in Group 1, all Group 1 motor carriers are looked at, and that is where they come up with the percentile. You're not looked, you know, your motor carrier's not looked at a motor carrier that's in Group 2 or Group 3 or Group 4 or Group 5.
Right. All grading on a curve.
Right. All motor carriers grouped in with the size of your motor carrier, they're all compared. So you could have, you know, literally thousands of motor carriers that are, say, in Group 1. And so all of the data is looked at compared against those motor carriers that are in that group.
Oh, okay.
All right. Hopefully that answered your question there, Dennis. And we're back in a moment with Ask the Law.
On the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law, 800-288-9227. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
Senior Trooper Monty Dial is here, retired of the Texas Highway Patrol. Let's see if we can't get one more question in before we let him go home.
Let's go to Jay. Jay, hi. You're on the Midnight Radio Network. Welcome. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I received a letter from the state, and I lost my CDL for 2 months due to 2 speeding tickets over 15 miles an hour.
Okay.
And, am I going to have to pay a reinstatement fee? Because I got my CDL back yesterday, but it didn't say anything about paying a fee.
There should have been a letter. If they assessed a reinstatement fee, you would have had to pay that to get the license back.
Well, I didn't lose my license to drive the car. Just
right,
I mean.
Right, right. So in that situation right there, they suspended the license under 383, rather than under state law. So, no, you wouldn't have to pay a reinstatement fee in that situation.
Okay. All right. And, I had the same job for 8 years. I lost my job over this and everything. It's really put me in a world of hurt. I know it's my fault, but how come we can't take defensive driving?
Federal government passed a part in 383 that says drivers cannot mask violations.
Yeah. They all have to be out there.
Yes,
in the open. Yeah,
I don't know. It just,
unfortunately, Jay, that's the situation. But we wish you all the best, and hopefully you can get back on the road soon. And we do appreciate the call. By the way, you can go to askthelaw.org if you ever have a CMV question. Click on that big red button that says "Email Ask the Law," and make sure that you do that. You can do it any time, and they'll get back to you with the answer as soon as possible. All right. Who knows if we'll see a final rule on 8 hours of service, anything on ELBRs over the next month. I know we've been saying that for a couple of months now, but we'll certainly watch that. Have a great Thanksgiving, you and your family.
Y'all do too.
And we'll talk to you in December. It is Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network.